I'm Josh Porter, and this is the Van City Church Podcast. The following teaching is part six in our series, Nothing Burdensome. We are concluding this series by inviting our entire church into a shared rule of life.
I thought about how to best begin this conversation, and the thing that came to mind was Ryan Coogler's second film, Creed. Yeah. In Ryan Coogler's second film, Creed, if you haven't seen it, Rocky Balboa, at kind of the top of the second act, he walks with Adonis Creed through Mick's gym on a cold Philadelphia morning, and Rocky warns him. Adonis assumes this is an invitation to be trained by Rocky, but Rocky warns him, and I wrote down the actual quote. He says, "You're going to take a beating, you're going to take hits, you're going to get knocked down, you're going to have to learn to get up, but," he goes on, "you have to work hard. I swear to God, if you're not going to do it, I'm out." Just to train, as a body, they didn't even have any plans or prospects, just to train at all, just a sports thing. But to them, this is a way of life, and so they take it really seriously. Movies are filled with scenes like this one of high stakes, warnings and oaths and initiation rites. Good grief, I was trying to think back along the timeline of movies that have scenes like these, and I remember that they wanted Bruce Wayne to execute a criminal just to join the League of Shadows in the first place. You'll have to see that film if you want to know whether or not Bruce Wayne executes a criminal in the Himalayan mountains. In Stephen King's magnum opus, It, I think that's his magnum opus, a group of childhood friends, they make a blood pact to remain friends for life, united together against an evil entity, and that they will come back together to fight against evil together when and if the time comes. Nuns and monks take vows before they join monasteries and convents. Even the Boy Scouts have initiation rituals. But a church is not a gym or a monastery or a street club. Its doors remain open, literally and figuratively, to journeying wanderers, curious observers, jaded former Christians, spiritual pilgrims, and consumerist church shoppers alike. And those are a little bit of the types of people that come to any given church on Sunday, and there's a little bit of that type of person in each one of us, I think. When you cross the threshold beyond the warm well-wishers in the front, past the coffee and the kids' check, into the sacred space of prayer and worship and scripture, to what are you being invited beyond just a weekend event? If you have a Bible, go ahead and turn to Hebrews chapter 10. Hebrews chapter 10 in the New Testament. If you're new to the Bible, feel free to consult the table of contents. For weeks now, we've been talking about this ancient practice called a rule of life, which is a set of evolving daily, weekly, monthly, quarterly, annually spiritual rhythms and practices best suited for your formation in this season of your life, this stage of your discipleship. When the early Christians first worked out how to emulate and then implement Jesus' teachings and lifestyle, they arrived at the idea of a rule of life, an ancient practice which is still realized by Christians across centuries all over the world, including in our church. Now, the plan is to conclude the teaching part of the series this evening, as you continue to write and revise and implement your own rule of life in your Van City communities over the coming weeks. And we are inviting each of you that calls Van City home to braid into your unique rule of life, your personal rule of life, our church-wide rule of life that we would all share together as a community. It's really simple. Once again, this is the church rule of life. Come to church on Sunday. So far, so good. Great job, everyone. Be in a Van City community. Serve the church as best as you can in your season of life and stage of apprenticeship. And give finances to keep the church going, what Cam was talking about just a moment ago, which we'll talk about later on in the evening as well. Every single item on this list is participatory rather than passive. The invitation, the church-wide rule of life, is actually an ask. And it begins with come to church on Sunday. Not just being here, the idea is that you come to church on Sunday in order to participate in the gathering of the saints in the language of the scriptures. So in Hebrews chapter 10, my Bible features this little header before the section that begins with verse 19, and my header titles that section, and I quote, "A call to persevere in faith." So let's stand together as a gesture of respect and reverence for the inspired, authoritative scriptures. We're going to read from Hebrews chapter 10, beginning with verse 19. The author writes, "Therefore, brothers and sisters, since we have confidence to enter the most holy place by the blood of Jesus, by a new and living way opened for us through the curtain, that is, his body, and since we have a great priest over the house of God, let us draw near to God with a sincere heart and with the full assurance that faith brings, having our hearts sprinkled to cleanse us from a guilty conscience and having our bodies washed with pure water. Let us hold unswervingly to the hope we profess, for he who promised is faithful. And let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds, not giving up meeting together, as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching." These words are inspired by God. Thank you, guys. Go ahead and take a seat. Do not give up meeting together as some are in the habit of doing. Notice, before the author reaches the penultimate verse, don't give up meeting together, they've already presupposed that the letter will be turned over, not to an individual, but to the community of faith. In other words, to a church. We have confidence. We have a great priest. Let us draw near, and on and on and on throughout the text. The idea of following Jesus has always been done and will always be done in the context of community. Community is a complicated thing, and it often wounds us, and it often becomes trying and difficult, but following Jesus can be done no other way. And people have known this throughout the Jesus tradition across centuries. In fact, in 1938, which is a long time ago if you're counting, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, he wrote what is largely considered one of the landmark works on Christian community, and in it he wrote this: "The sooner this shock of disillusionment comes to an individual and to a community, the better for both. Every human wish, dream that is injected into the Christian community is a hindrance to genuine community and must be banished if genuine community is to survive. He who loves the dream of community more than the community itself becomes a destroyer of the latter. Even though his personal intentions may be ever so honest and earnest and sacrificial, the man who fashions a visionary ideal of community demands that it be realized by God, by others, and by himself. He enters the community of Christians with his demands, sets up his own law, and judges the brethren and God and himself." Now notice, Bonhoeffer is talking about something much more complicated than a weekly event. So if come to church on Sunday is the first part of our church-wide rule of life, and it's more than just a weekend event, physical presence in a pew, in a building, at a point in time, what is it? If you're taking notes, it begins with engagement. Now, please hear me when I say this. Disclaimer, when I say that, you know, if you're a visitor or if you're new to Jesus, if you're just beginning to figure out where you fit in all this or even in this particular church, you are, of course, more than welcome to be here, take your time, explore, observe, ask questions, all of it. I know I talked about a blood pack from a novel at the beginning of this, but we don't do that kind of thing. But if you belong to this family, and you are not a passive party to the church experience, meaning the church is you. It's not some abstract institution. When you come here on Sunday, when you show up to your Van City community during the week, we're not only expecting you to engage, we actually need you to engage. We need you, in other words. Church is not a provided service for your consumption or even something that's provided solely for your edification. It is a family. Of course, we serve one another in a family, and of course, family edifies one another, but that's not its primary purpose and function. In a healthy family, everyone pitches in. We're not putting on a show on Sunday evening. We're not calling you to join something in which you sit back passively and observe something that washes over you. We are inviting you, calling you into a way of life. And look, I get it. You don't always want to engage church, and it's not just because we've forgotten how we're the illegitimate children of Amazon Prime. It's because we're tired or we're worn down or we're hurting or we're distracted or we feel as if we actually have very little to give in the first place, which I get it. I understand all that. Been there myself. So have you. Church asks something. Community costs something. To embrace a life shared with other people, you have to surrender part of your autonomy. And that's a very difficult thing for many of us to do. But remember, the high ask of commitment is not about you being subservient to the ruthless demands of some institution, some seat of power. It's about all of us needing one another for this to happen at all. When you refuse to give the family a good, consistent, faithful presence, you are, please listen to me on this, I know this is hard to hear, but you are essentially withholding whatever it is that God has to offer through you and through your consistent, faithful presence. So, what is engagement? It means faithful presence, being here on Sunday, being at your Van City community faithfully, consistently, not making excuses, not bailing out, not skipping when there's something better to do or when it's sunny outside. In our basics class, we encourage communities to set clear expectations from the outset. And this is the one that we suggest. This is what we use in my community. We hand it off to people in theirs if they want to use it. And the expectation is this: unless you're sick or you have to work or you have a family emergency, you pledge to show up to community night and to the Sunday gathering. Those are the acceptable excuses. And if you cite any other reason, then we encourage you to hold one another accountable, not with shame or to single anyone out or to monitor behavior. None of those things, but because we have learned and observed what is, you know, obvious from common sense, that flakiness, inconsistency, destroys community. How can you share life and vulnerability and accountability when you never know who will or won't be there consistently? How can a community build meaningful practice and depth of shared discipleship if there's always a person or two who miss church on Sunday half the time and don't know what God was up to at the gathering, and they essentially begin to drag the entire group down? How can I do church with someone who comes to community night but not the gathering, or to the gathering but not community night? They'd be only half in at best. Imagine someone showing up for piano lessons and telling the teacher, just so you know, I plan to skip every other lesson. I don't want to make those days up or repeat them. I'm just going to skip half of my piano lessons. The teacher would say, okay, well, you're going to miss half of what it means to learn the piano. So encouragement means, first and foremost, being here. And being here with the good of the family in mind, meaning it's not just, oh, they're going to call me out if I don't show up, and they need butts and seats. We don't need those things, don't care about those things. Faithful, consistent, showing up on time with other people in mind demonstrates that you value the good of other people above yourself, which is something that Paul expressly commanded us to do in the New Testament. Engagement means being awake, listening, participating, stepping beyond the bounds of our comfort zones to value other people, to check in on them, to be a faithful presence in their lives. I'm not talking about being performative or some kind of one-person social force of nature, if that's what it's after. I've failed miserably. I'm just talking about showing up, being present, being engaged, faithful presence. Come to church on Sunday. Coming to church on Sunday is also about worship. Worship, which we dedicate the bulk of our time to on a Sunday evening, is about stewarding intimacy and connection with God's Spirit, and not about our preferences. And quite frankly, it's not even just about you and God. It's about the rest of the family as well. Believe me, I've been working with churches and church leaders long enough to have heard dozens and dozens of stories. You probably have too, from individuals that sound something like this. You know, I showed up to church and I was worn out and empty, but then I saw so-and-so in front of me and their arms were raised in worship with wild abandon. I was so encouraged and emboldened that I was led by that person without them even knowing it into the presence of God. I think of 1 Peter, when we are declared a royal priesthood, capable and responsible for bringing one another into the presence of God. That's not primarily Levi's job only. It's not my job only. It's all of our shared responsibility as the family of God. And of course, that doesn't mean that, you know, it's entirely up to you to put on some kind of show just so someone else can get into worship. It just means that when we make the deliberate, disciplined effort to engage in this unique time and space, because we believe that it's sacred and important, without being subject or subject to our moods and preferences, without them overshadowing us, and when we cultivate intimacy and connection with God with our minds and our voices and our bodies, and when we push against the limitations of our own disposition for the sake of God and other people, that lifts up the entire family of God. And think of that language from Hebrews that we just read. Spur one another on toward love and good deeds. Don't give up meeting together. It's not just about positive life examples across the board. When we come together as the church, we can encourage one another in a very unique way. That's part of what it means to come and to contribute rather than just showing up to take. Worship leader and musician Dana Dooley argues that sometimes I sing for the person next to me. She's talking about worship music, by the way. They need to hear about God's faithfulness, about his goodness and his grace. And I sing a little bit louder so that they know in the depths of their soul. And sometimes I need you to sing for me. I need to be reminded that he is here and he's not silent. I need to be reminded that he is faithful and he is good. And remember, this is a specific disciplined effort for almost every single one of us, maybe a handful of people in here on any given night, no matter what, just absolutely love to throw up their hands and sing and dance and make a lot of noise. That's beautiful, wonderful. Thank God there's a couple of you in here. But almost every single one of us have to learn the specific disciplined effort to engage, even when we don't feel like it or our preferences aren't met with exact specificity. You are working to push back the indoctrination of consumer culture and mindless entertainment and cynicism. And if you think about how much work that requires in the cultural landscape of our day and time, I think, my God, are we're going to engage that effort by standing stoically and mumbling? I don't think that's going to do it. Or that's how we're going to fight back against all this, by just reading slides in our minds? Is that really how we communicate loving devotion to the people that we care about the most? Are your spouses okay with that? Are your friends or your kids okay with that kind of restraint? Oh, I'm just not an affectionate person, so you're just gonna have to assume that I love you, child, you know? No, we sacrifice our own moods and preferences, and we remember that worship is about God and an opportunity to love one another. Expressive whole body worship is a ministry of our presence for our brothers and sisters that need to remember that I'm in this with them. And then they see us in worship and say, they're still here, I'm still here, we still believe these things. Coming to church on Sunday is about worship. It's also about response. You don't come here to allow the experience of church to wash over you. You're here to respond to what the Spirit of God is saying and doing tonight. So you do respond with immediacy in the moment, appropriately, as is directed by the Holy Spirit in the context of the gathering, by the church leaders in the context of the gathering. You join us as we pray. Earlier, Taylor had the kids pray over the adults. This is an example we would like to lead them in well, that when we say, hey, everyone, we're going to pray together, this is something that we actually do. Out loud, all together, when that's what we're doing, or in quiet contemplation, when that's what we're doing, when the time comes, you read along, you process, and you respond in the moment as God works. This is something, or there is something unique and special about this space and responding within this space. It doesn't mean that unless you react immediately, God, you know, that word goes away and God can't and won't do anything about it. But Cam says it all the time, and I agree 100%, like, you don't get tonight back. There's something about this space and acting on it. So look at it this way. If my wife came to me in tears saying, listen, I've been thinking about you and I want to tell you something important, would it be appropriate for me to listen to what she says and then just quietly walk away? And then, you know, maybe the next day shoot her a text to continue the conversation as the week allows. Or would I, in that moment, respond with immediacy, embrace her, tell me everything. I want to hear everything that you have to say, and be in that moment with her as it happens. That is the appropriate response in intimate, loving relationship. And it doesn't mean that if you don't get up, God won't speak to you. But there's something to being in the moment with the Spirit as he speaks, and the opportunity to be surrounded by prophetic voices that you know and love and care for you as the family of God cries out in worship all around you. You know, in theology, we call the worship gathering, it's something referred to as a theology of thin spaces, when the veil between heaven and earth gets very, very thin. And as arbitrary as it can sound to some of us from kind of a stoic Western Protestant tradition, there is something unique about the way God speaks and moves in an environment when there's 100 voices lifted in worship and there's brothers and sisters around you reaching out and saying, I will pray for you. I will listen for you. That same thing doesn't happen the exact same way if you shoot an email to Cam on Monday morning and say, let's get coffee and talk about that word that I knew was for me and didn't come forward for, you know? And finally, being at church on Sunday is about responsibility. Over my years as a pastor, I've heard people from this church and many other churches lament a lack of received hospitality. That's a critique of lots of different churches because everyone has lots of different expectations for how exactly hospitality should roll out. Some of us would like it to be kind of like Home Depot, and it's like, you know, if I want to talk to someone, I'll go find them. Don't mess with me. You know what I mean? And other people want to be constantly assaulted by everyone as soon as they walk in the door. It's a generational thing. It varies from person to person. But sometimes there are folks at our church, other churches across these many years that they say, well, you know, I showed up and no one engaged me in a meaningful way. They didn't talk to me at length. Or they didn't ask how I was. They didn't invite me in, that kind of thing. And I'm not being dismissive of that pain or that problem. But I've often offered this, if I may, with respect, very gentle pushback. Did you talk to others at length, or did you ask how someone else was doing? Did you invite someone in? Stepping into the messiness of family means taking responsibility for and with that family, that it's not for you alone, but you are for others as well. This isn't my church. It's not Cameron or Levi's church. It doesn't belong to the overseers of the church. This church belongs to King Jesus, and all of us are responsible for it as the family of God. So when something inevitably gets messy, not if, but when, what do you do about it? Do you gripe about something, I don't know, that I said up here in your community where I won't hear it, but then somehow do every time because someone tells me? Or will you bail out because, you know, Cam did something you didn't like? It would be that guy, trust me. Or would you not show up because the leader you don't like is the one that week, or not engage your community because someone hurt your feelings, or do you learn to understand with all of us that this is my family as much as anyone else's, so we all do the difficult and often painful work of stepping into the messiness together and work it out, to confront and hold accountable in gracious, loving kindness, to be open about when you've been hurt, inviting others into forgiveness. Do we release others in forgiveness, or do we release our own felt need for control and participate in the mutual submission and self-sacrificial love of family? Or do we maintain a death grip on our felt need for control? And then when church breaks down for us, when we can bear it no longer, is everyone to blame but us? And listen, as an overseer of Van City Church, I and the other overseers will be held uniquely spiritually accountable before God for the church, yes. But it's your church too, and you'll answer for it as well. It's your family that are put under the stewardship of your loving care, and that's a beautiful thing. If a healthy family could bail out or write someone off when something didn't go their way, believe me, my family would have ditched me years ago. That's just not how it works. In a healthy family, there's a shared concern for the whole, and we all take responsibility to care for the group. So as our shared church rule of life, we come to church on Sunday to engage, worship, respond, and to take responsibility together for our family. But the church rule of life is about more than just Sunday evening. So I'm going to invite Cam, Lexi, Scott, and Taylor up here to help me with the rest of the evening. If you guys don't know, here come these guys. That's why these chairs are up here, by the way. I know that it creates like a kind of distracting expectation for the rest of the evening. What are the chairs going to be for? Cam made a joke, but then it didn't come to fruition, so they got to be up there for something. They really put chairs up here just to make this joke. So, the church-wide rule of life. Come to church on Sunday. Be in a Van City community, serve the church as best as you can in your season of life and stage of apprenticeship to Jesus, and give finances to help the church going. This is Cameron Silsby, our pastor of communities and people. So Cam, when we talk about Van City communities, and we do every single week, constantly, you and I have both taught on them innumerable times, but there's something more significant or weighty about a church-wide rule of life that says, in writing, be in a Van City community. You've been in community, leading community for years now. You've taught it. You've lived it. What do you think, or why do you think this is so core to the life of our church and to an actual rule of life?
Yeah, I think, honestly, well, number one, like, rule of life and community kind of go hand in hand. First off, you can't follow Jesus outside of relationships. Try to obey the New Testament and Jesus's commands when you're in solitude, when you're just like not around anyone else. How do you love your neighbor when you're not around a neighbor at all? You know, so I think there's this aspect of community and spiritual formation and learning how to love somebody as Christ loves them. You know, it's just this, it's this beautiful thing, it's this hard thing, and community is one of those kind of contexts where it's like, this is it. This is, you either are going to love the people or you're not going to love the people. And maybe they're really likable or maybe they're not really likable, but you're not called to really kind of judge them based on their preferences or anything like that. You're called to love them. What does it mean for you to love them today? What does it mean for you to learn to love them a little bit more today? And that's kind of how this all plays out. And a rule of life for community. Gosh, relationships need structure. Relationships need consistency. That's the rule of life, that our relationship with God, our relationship with others. It's really hard to live your life completely organically, not having any idea what's going to be happening in the next moment. That actually sounds like you're headed towards like an anxiety disorder or something like that, when you have no idea, when you're juggling so much stuff. But having a rule of life that you're living out, that your community is living out, it's this thing that you are trying to live into. They know it. You know it. You get encouragement. You get accountability. It's a beautiful thing. We need it. It's almost like God designed us as humans for relationships and structures. It's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. And again, you know, you've taught this. You've lived this. You have a rule of life. Community is part of your rule of life and has been for years. So I'm assuming, or I know this from knowing you, that you've experienced some version of just about any good or bad thing that can happen in community, some variation of just about everything. So to those in our church, a lot of you already have community as part of your rule of life. You already have one, and thank God you're functioning in community. What encouragement or advice would you give as they consider continuing to commit to, or even for the first time, commit to community as part of their rule of life?
Yeah, just do it.
Oh.
Yeah, that's...
Let's pray.
I think this goes back to the idea that, you know, maybe you're thinking about being in a community, being around people, diving in. And based on your story and your experiences, you might have a number of hesitations. Or you might be so hungry and desperate for it right now, and it's daunting to think about the time that it's actually going to take for these relationships to feel deep to you or meaningful to you. And I would just encourage you to take that one step at a time. You know, for our church, it looks like, you know, kind of this first step is, you know, show up to our church, check out the gathering, and we have a basics class, this class for people who are new to the church to learn more about what we believe, what we think, and what it means to be in a Van City community. You know, churches, you know, there's a million different kinds of small groups. We have a version of small groups. What do we expect? What do we do? Well, you come to basics and you find out. We have basics coming at the end of April, April 28th, I believe. I don't even think there's a slide for it, but it's on the website, vancity.church. You'll be there. There's my plug. Go and check it out. But whether you're new to this thing or you've been going for it, and maybe you're in community and you're at that moment where you're kind of like, oh, this is hard. Is this right? Is this the way it's supposed to be? I was just coaching, doing a coaching meeting with a handful of leaders before the gathering, and it probably represents like 20 or 30% of our church, like their groups that they lead. And those coaching meetings are a blast because it's the conversations around how do we help these groups of people, and then these leaders are affected themselves, and how are they growing, and how are they struggling, and they're speaking into each other's lives. And there is something beautiful and profound and meaningful about that sort of real life experience of being in relationship with other people. And I would just encourage you, you know, if you do need help, if you need, like, if you're like, gosh, I'm really struggling, let's talk about it. I'd love to talk to you about it. I'm sure your community leader would love to talk to you about it. Talk to somebody who's been doing it that seems like they kind of understand what they're doing. Talk to whoever you need to. This is just a you thing. We all experience this at some point, and we all need people helping us through it and supporting us and encouraging us and teaching us and giving us some wisdom. It's part of the spiritual formation thing. So again, to circle back around, just do it.
There you go, Faith, yeah. All right, thanks, Cam. Lexi is in the house. Guys, this is Lexi. If you didn't know, she's our deacon of youth, Cam Past the Germs. When we started Van City, if you guys don't know the story of our youth group, we had no youth group because we had no youth and no one to lead a youth group, so it kind of became this recursive loop. We have no youth group because we have no youth. We have no youth because we have no youth group. But then a few years ago, thanks to Lexi and Cam and a team of amazing volunteers, that finally changed. Now we have a terrific group of students, and with each passing year, the group is going to grow. Here in just a few years, it's going to mutate to mammoth proportions, because we have so many kids. But you guys, the youth, meet on Thursdays, so for a lot of us, it's not something that we observe. If you're not serving, it's, you know, we're doing something else on Thursday night, and it isn't part of the rhythm of our week. So can you tell us, kind of in a nutshell, how youth group is going, what it's been like? Everyone here wants the update.
Yeah, of course. I don't know if any of my students are listening right now. They're probably reading their Zelda books. But youth group is going great. I have, just had the pleasure to do this the last few years, or a couple years. And it's a small group of us, mostly middle school students, show up. And I have a handful of amazing leaders. Is it okay? Could I have the leaders raise their hands if you're a youth group leader?
Yeah.
Yay. And then if you're a youth group student, do you want to raise your hand too? They're probably all in the back and they're not going to do it. Yay. Awesome. Well, incredible group. I struggle because a lot of them are very shy, but I love it in the sense of they have been a huge blessing for me as just being brand new to this role. It's an incredible group of students that are just wanting to get to know Jesus more. And I remember when we had first kind of started on Thursday nights, I asked them kind of what they wanted from youth group, and a lot of them said community. So it just sounds like, it just feels like we are just kind of training these students the way that Van City students would be trained, if that makes sense. And yeah, it's been a really encouraging season. We're planning summer camp for this summer with other churches in the area. So yeah, it feels like we're doing the dang thing.
Doing
so it's really fun.
Yeah, yeah. And the reason that I wanted to talk to you about it and in this context is that if our churchwide rule of life includes serving, kids, as Taylor will remind us all in just a minute, make up almost 39% of our church. And those kids are going to become youth, some of them like this year, next year, and on into next year. So this is not just an important part of our church, it's just part of our church. Yeah. And it's a crucial, enormous part of our church. If someone were curious about serving as part of their rule of life with the youth, what would you tell them about that?
I would say, come talk to me, because I love to talk. But also, yeah, you can always come up to me and ask any questions, or we can go out for coffee, or my email is youth@vancity.church, and we can just talk about how it goes. But in a nutshell, it's every Thursday from leaders get there at 6, and it ends at 8, And it's a weekly ask, but I feel like once, if you get to come and see it and have see it happen, we have a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. So it's just very youth group, but very small scale in the sense of like we play games and we get to have really genuine conversations about Jesus with each other in a small setting. We do worship together. So if you're passionate about youth, I know I wouldn't be following Jesus without some of the youth leaders that I had growing up. So if you're someone that has that part of your story, I highly encourage you to pray about it and to think about it and to talk to me about it because, yeah, we need leaders, especially as it is growing, like everyone keeps reminding me. Yeah, it's growing. We definitely need more women, but yeah. I would say, please come talk to me. I would love to chat more about it because we will need the help for sure.
Yeah, yeah, and you bring up something crucial, which is that it's not just a statistic. It is, but it's also the reality represented in the room based on you guys' reaction that being in middle school and high school is not just a formational time, but it's when most of us experience the love of Jesus through another person, often a youth leader, that has a formative effect on us long-term. So the idea of sharing the gospel, the idea of mission, evangelism, all that stuff is folded into serving with youth group and being a faithful presence in a student's life. So for those of us who, you know, the idea of Thursday night might not be in the cards immediately, it's still our church. These are still our you know, brothers and sisters as well, and we care for them and want to participate in any way we can in their spiritual formation. How can we be praying for you and for our leaders and our students?
Always a good question. I can always use an extra ounce of prayer because trying to figure out how to minister to middle school and high schoolers in 2024 is very difficult mm-hmm. and very different than what I'm used to. I graduated in 2014, so I'm not like that far off, but it's very different than it used to be. So just prayer for an extra ounce of protection over our group. Vancouver, Washington is a very interesting place to follow Jesus in the sense of there's a lot of people that have naysay about it, especially in schools. And so just an extra ounce of prayer of protection over our students will always be amazing. And then as we have summer camps coming up and things like that, just prayer that our group, as we are so small, can really knit together through relationships with Jesus, with each other, all of that stuff. Yeah, just prayers that can just continue to root in Jesus and continue just to bloom really beautiful flowers. And I say that kind of jokingly, but I'm being really true that these students are amazing. And I see that they're really wanting more of Jesus. So just prayers of encouragement for that too is just always awesome.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you, Lexi. Yeah. Which brings us to Scott Barguer, who you might also know as the mustache guy. In fact, that's how he was pointed out to me when I was invited to plant this church. They said, do you know Scott Barguer? And I said, I think so. And they're like, the mustache guy? And they did the hand thing. And I was like, right, yeah, I got him. He also used to frequently wear bow ties. That was a bow tie and mustache combo. From day one, like any church, we've invited anyone who calls Van City home to give finances. I think the very first gathering we had, someone stood on stage and talked like we do tonight about finances. And Scott, you and I have been here from the very beginning. Before we started anything, it was, you know, Scott and I were asked to pray and consider what it would be like to start a church in Vancouver. We've been giving our finances from back before we even had a Sunday gathering, the first time they opened an account for our church, you know, we were participating. So I say that to say we're right there in it with everyone else, participating in the thing to which we've been inviting everyone all these years. But, you know, you're also, Scott's an accountant. He's been an overseer these 8 years of our church. We've had, or he's had unique insight into the budget of the church. And you've been a part of all the processes, working with the church that planted us, working with the team of folks that kept us tax compliant as we got started, seeking outside wisdom from other people and church planners, frugality, the whole thing. Now, we've organized teams to deal with budget decisions, especially when it comes to salaries. So we've said this before, but if you don't remember, no paid person makes any decisions about the numbers of who gets paid what. I tried, but they didn't listen. No, I'm just kidding. What can you, Scott, tell us about the way that the budget is made, how we set the numbers, how we stick to those numbers?
First, I'd like to say thanks for giving me the most exciting topic.
Yep, budget. Finances, budget and finances.
When Josh asked me to do this, I told him I'd put together a three-hour PowerPoint presentation. I could easily have done that. I'm going to try to keep it short, but I love talking about money. I do it for a living. The short answer to your question is the budget's put together by the executive team. That team has looked different over the 8 years of the church. It's kind of grown and morphed. It's always been made up of men and women that are volunteers to serve the church, primarily volunteers so that there's no one on staff making decisions about staff salaries. And then that executive team is tasked with the really challenging responsibility of making good financial decisions for the church as a business. It's this strange little dichotomy. The church is not a business. We're not here to make a profit, but we need to run a financially tight ship so that we can actually support ourselves. So the way we look at it as an executive team is, as a church, we're in the business of growing a family of God that's in the business of learning to be like Jesus, become like Jesus, and do what he did. So when we budget, that's the very first thing we have in the front of our mind. And then we kind of have, the best way I can break it down is kind of a three-part process to budgeting. The first part is the first 10% that comes in the door of the church goes right back out the door as a justice fund. That's how we started from day one. That's what we ask of you guys as members of the church to give. And so we as a church turn around and give that money away. That fund has grown as our budget has grown. And so we've recently been in the process of putting together a justice team to help administer that, because we have more funds in that account to give away, which is exciting. At least I find that exciting. I love budgeting. So we first thing we do is give away 10%. The next thing we do is we pay salaries. I grew up as a PK for the second half of my childhood, and for me it's a really big sticking point that churches in general across America underpay and overwork their pastors. Mm-hmm. It's not a great model. It's a really great model for burnout and horrible consequences. So we look at it as a real job with a real salary, which means we have 40-hour weeks, we make our staff stick to that, and then we wanna do our best to pay them well. We would still like to be able to pay them more, but we wanna provide benefits. They're raising families. We all know how expensive it is to live. And so after we give 10% away, we do our best to make livable salaries and benefits for our staff. And then we turn on and go, okay, what money do we have left, and what's the best way to use that money to help this church grow, to be with Jesus, become like Jesus, and do what he did. So it's a really tricky process, because we're looking at money and finances and how do we manage that well. And then the second half of your question was, how do we make sure it's actually happening? Is we have checks and balances in place. The staff, Patrick in particular, are managing some of the books and a lot of the finances. And in order to protect Patrick from any accusation of mismanagement of money and all the staff from mismanagement of money, the executive team is overseeing them. We're checking in on a monthly, quarterly, and annual basis to make sure that there is checks and balances, that money is being managed well, no one person has control over the church money, and all those decisions are made under the oversight of the overseers and the executive team.
Yeah. And, you know, like I said, we do talk about finances up here on Sunday practically every single week. Anyone who's listening knows that our story has been a story of kind of on and off struggle across 8 years to remain consistent as a church with giving. And yet, even though we didn't make budget, this is not an exaggeration, for the first few years of the church, we did not make budget monthly, and we did not make budget annually. And often still today, we don't make budget month to month from our giving, meaning from people who code to Van City giving finances. And yet, here we are, still a church, and still, you know, rounding up enough finances to continue to function as a church year to year. What can you tell us about the church's journey of finances and how we pulled off the magic trick of most churches don't make it past year one because of finances, statistically? So we beat that and we're still going. How'd we do that?
Magic. You nailed it. No, we had a very generous church that planted us. They gave us a very large, we call it our nest egg. They gave us a big chunk of money and said, go plant a church and make it happen. And so we've managed that money very well, and we still have some of that. It's not entirely gone. But that's really helped us get through those first years, and we still rely on it in months and in years where giving fluctuates and we're on the lower side of giving. The trouble is that nest egg is a finite amount of money, and it will eventually run out. We are using that to proactively grow the church. We're staffing up and hiring ahead of anticipated growth. So that nest egg will eventually run out. So we can't depend on that to make budget. And the other thing that comes in with a surprising amount of frequency, I guess I should probably stop being surprised by it, but it keeps happening, is we get a handful of large donations, some in the church, but largely from folks outside of the church. Folks that listen to the podcast are from out of state, and they just send a giant chunk of money and say, Van City, you need this, go. And that's fantastic. It helps support us. It helps us keep the doors open, keep the staff paid. But it's not something we want to depend on from a budgeting standpoint, and it makes it really hard to hire folks and pay folks and keep the church doors open if the money's going like this. And giving really has fluctuated over the 8 years of the church, which is why you hear us talking about it on stage all the time. There is a direct correlation between the amount of time we talk about money on stage and the amount of money that comes in the door. I love stats, so it's there. If we stop talking about giving, giving goes down. It's not a good thing. But what we would love to see is this church become self-sustaining. When we budget, even though we have large donations that come in occasionally and a nest egg we can draw on, we budget specifically for the amount of giving this church body should be able to generate. There's tons of church statistics and organizations that put together fun numbers of how many people are in your church, what's your demographic, what kind of giving income should you expect as a church? And so we don't budget beyond that. But the unfortunate thing is we're consistently not making that number, which means we're living off the nest egg, we're living off of the occasional generous gifts, and we want to see our church body grow in generosity, not just monetarily in all areas, but we need it to grow monetarily so that we can sustain ourselves. A family that can't support itself doesn't really have a leg to stand on to go help any other family. So as a church, we want to see us grow in generosity, in giving, so that we can sustain ourselves. And then if those extra monies come in, fantastic, we can just turn around and give it to someone else that needs it.
Yeah. And even if we continue to get generous donations from people outside the church, or, you know, the surprise checks in the mail that come every few months, or even if our nest egg from the church that planted us lasts a while yet, the future of our church, like you just said, hinges on us being able to learning to give and grow in the spiritual discipline of generosity. So as we invite everyone to make giving a part of their consistent rule of life, what encouragement would you give as not just a founding overseer, but as someone who's practiced giving consistently in your life as part of your rule of life? How would you encourage others into that same rhythm and discipline?
I would probably have two encouragements on that. The first thing I would say is if you're not already on a budget, get on one, a personal budget for yourself. And not for the sake of like, I'm budgeting so I can save money and squirrel it away and be rich, but budgeting so that you can know where your money goes. As an accountant, I get to look at people's finances every day, and I can know who's going to walk in the door, what their level of generosity and kindness and compassion is going to be, based on where I see their money going before I've even met them. So if you haven't already done so or done it recently, take the time to make a budget, see where your money is going, because that is it's a very obvious picture of what you value. You spend your money on what you value. There's no way around that. So take the time to figure out where your money's going. And then after you figure out what you're valuing based on where you're currently spending, set yourself a budget and tell your money where to go based on what you value. And that brings me to the second thing I would encourage you guys to do, which is work on generosity. You heard Cam talk about generosity when he was talking about money earlier. Generosity is not natural. Generosity is defined as, I made notes because my brain's a little foggy in tax season. Generosity is defined as the readiness to give more of something than is strictly necessary or expected. I don't know about any of you guys sitting up here or out there, but that's not natural for me. My time, my money, my energy, my compassion is naturally focused inward on what's good for me. And the only way I've found to break out of that is through the practice of giving. By giving to the church, which we've been doing for 8+ years, and my parents taught me when I was a tiny little kid in little envelopes with pennies and nickels, back when those were worth something. Giving starts with your very first 10%, right? Think back to early Genesis, right? Giving of your first fruits. That sets the tone with where the rest of your money goes. And when you tell your money where to go and start by giving your first 10% to the church, giving that away, it opens up all those other areas of your life, your time, your energy, your compassion, your care for others, that opens that up to the will of Jesus so that you can actually look outward and not focus inward. So it fits right in with what we're talking about, the rule of life. Start there with that 10% and then figure out how to be generous, and you gotta practice it. It doesn't come naturally. It's not just gonna happen overnight.
Yeah, thanks, Scott. Yeah, and thanks for all your hard work as an overseer and as a member of the executive team doing the budget. I hate the budget, hate its guts, and when they start talking about it, I just start playing a movie in my head. Lexi just said she was just doing that whole time. I was listening, Scott. It was great. Which brings us to Taylor. I saved Taylor for the end, even though, you know, we talked about community, we talked about serving, we talked about giving. Now we're coming back to serving again, because you know y'all are in trouble when Taylor gets up here. Taylor oversees almost 39% of all the people here on Sunday, which is crazy to think about. Of all the people that will be, and you'll see them in a second, the whole room, 39% of those people are Taylor's responsibility and the responsibility of her team of volunteers. And they happen to be kids. And I think a lot of us don't necessarily think by default long-term about church. And what I mean, I don't mean that everyone has plans to go somewhere else. I just mean that we don't sit and think, okay, 10 years from now at Van City, you know, we are about to celebrate, like I said, 8 years together on Easter. And that'll be part of our celebration as well. 8 years of Van City Church. I had one kid when we started this thing, and he was 2 years old. I have two other kids that were born into this church. It's the only church family that they've ever known. They've gone from the nursery to kids' church, and soon they're going to be in youth group, you know? And so many of you guys have similar stories. It's an incredible, beautiful thing, and it happens so fast that we tend to take it for granted. When I sat down and wrote down that reality that my son was 2 when we started this thing, and now he's 10, he's going to be 11, this, I was just like, suddenly very emotional. So Taylor, one of the ways that we've always framed our vision for Van City Kids from the very beginning was that we want it to be more than just babysitting or childcare. Why do you think it's important that Van City isn't babysitting, it isn't childcare while the grown-ups have church? What's your vision for our kids?
Yeah, I think that it is being intentional and thinking about the time as formational, and that kids are developmentally different from adults. They have different needs, and so it's appropriate for them to be downstairs for part of the night while we're upstairs, and that it's an opportunity for them to learn the exact same things that we're learning about: how to read the Bible, how to hear from God, how to understand how much God loves us, how to love the people around us. And, you know, kids do that differently. They do it through coloring or yelling or playing games, building Legos, like all kinds of different ways from the ways that adults learn. And so it's just really an opportunity to meet them where they are and share with them the love of Jesus in a way that they can hear and understand.
Yeah, and we talk, like I did earlier this evening, about church as a family all the time. It colors a lot of our conversation about how we frame church in the first place. But the tendency, and I do this as well with 3 children, is that when we talk about church should be a family, we're thinking primarily of peer relationships and these tensions within community, or how we do and don't get along with certain people and learn to serve one another at a peer level. How do you think we can extend that paradigm of church as a family beyond just the friends, the adults, the community groups, and to the kids who are every much as part of this church and who make up 39% of attendance on Sunday?
So I started with, I think it's such an incredible gift to get to be a part of God's family and to get to have responsibility for each other. It's an honor to take responsibility for other people, and especially people like the kids, where, like I was saying before, you know, they're developmentally different from us, and so their needs are sometimes bigger or take more time to meet. And I just think that when we get to serve each other, when we get to serve the kids, that we're really affirming their God-given worth, and we're saying, I agree, you are valuable, and you're worthy of my time and my energy and my attention. And I think that ascribes a lot of like dignity to the kids too, that they know that they're of value because they see adults spending that time with them, putting in that energy. It might not feel like it in the moment, but I think it has a cumulative effect if kids know how deeply they're loved by the adults because of the time spent and the quality of the attention given.
Yeah. And if someone were to ask you about serving, what kind of encouragement would you give them? What would you tell them? You know, and I think that this behooves us to say again and again and again is that all of us, and, you know, Lexi mentioned this, in 2024, living in the Pacific Northwest, to figure out what it means to live the way of Jesus and to talk about the way of Jesus, how we do as disciples of Jesus, gospel, evangelism, inviting other people into the kingdom of God, very real and important part of what it means to be a disciple of Jesus. For many of us, the most obvious opportunity that we have to share the gospel and to do evangelism is by serving the kids and the youth. It's a long game, but it is every bit as important and every bit really sharing the gospel. So if someone were interested in serving as part of their rule of life with the kids, what would you tell them?
I would say, let's get you in a classroom and see how you like it. I honestly think I have the best job here. The kids are so much fun. They're so silly and sweet, and just getting to know them through the work that I do it's so much fun. They are ready to learn. They're eager to hear from grown-ups, from their friends. I think about sometimes Josh or Cam will do an imaginative prayer for when we bless the kids. And I would just encourage you, look at a kid next to you while they have their eyes closed and they're picturing. I'm going to cry. It makes me cry every time. But while they're picturing Jesus looking at them, these kids are learning that Jesus loves them when they're here. I'm so sorry to cry. This is real kingdom work, that the kids they're young and they are open to learning, and we are showing them, like I said before, that they're valuable and that God thinks that they're valuable, and it's such a privilege to be in there and getting to share that good news with them 1 week a month.
Yeah, that's why I close my eyes during the imaginative prayer, because if I see it, I'll lose it. And how can we as a church be praying for you and for the kids in, like, practically in this season and going forward as a church?
Yeah, I think, just like I've been saying this whole time, pray that each kid here would know that Jesus loves them and that we love them and that they are very valuable. And I would pray for their parents. Pray that they would have strength to do the hard work of raising kids well. And they're in the trenches every day. They're the ones who are, you know, modeling for the kids God's love for them. And I would say for me, yeah, just pray that I would be led by the Spirit as I lead the kids. It's very intimidating to just know what the right thing to do is, and I only want to be guided by Jesus in that work.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. And thank you, guys, for your time talking to us. Would you guys go ahead and stand up with me? We're about to pray and enter a time of worship and response, which we've been talking about for part of this evening. But before we do, you know, I want to remind myself and all of us that we are, as a church, as a family, inviting you into a way of life. Not just a weekend event, not even just a weekend event and a community group, but a way of life. It's not a self-help plan. It's not an event. It's not even a subculture or a secret spiritual club. If the way of Jesus is intended to permeate every single dimension of your life, every single day of your life, every aspect of your personhood, and if following Jesus is only done in the sacred ancient community of the church, as we believe it is, then we are inviting you into that ancient, sacred, and shared way of life as a church together. So let me pray and invite God's Spirit to lead us together as a family.
Thanks for listening to Van City. You can connect with us and find more teachings and available resources at www.vancity.church. You can support Van City financially at vancity.church/give. Wait, what number is this? Can you look at the vancity.church/teaching real quick? I think it's 7. This is 6, okay. See, I would have been wrong. Okay. Is it going?
Yep.
I'm Josh Porter, and this is the Van City Church Podcast.